This is Your Money with Nancy Snedden of BDO, Licensed Insolvency Trustees. The views and opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of this station. Your Money with Nancy Snedden of BDO on VOCM.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Your Money with Nancy Snedden. I am Nancy Snedden. Thanks so much for joining us today. On today's show, we're focusing on money, right? The show is called Your Money. So how can you save more, make your hard-earned income go further? Because let's face it, considering the current economy, it's something that's top of mind for everyone right now. So my guest today has that advice for you. He's a former business journalist, speaker, finance educator, and author of the recently released book, Ask Questions, Save Money, Make More. Matt Schultz, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
So, Matt, I'm sure our listeners are eager to hear your advice, but before we get into that discussion, can you maybe share a little bit more with our listeners about yourself and the inspiration behind your book?
Yeah, absolutely. My job is a chief credit analyst at LendingTree, one of the bigger personal finance sites on the web. And my job is basically personal finance expert. And I spend a lot of time talking about government data and people's perceptions and things like that around all things money. And I'm also somebody who had $10,000 in credit card debt and a car payment on a brand new car when I was in my 20s that basically consumed my life. And so over the years, I've wanted to kind of share some of the things that I've learned, but I've never quite had the right idea, the right kind of concept behind it. But when this all came together around the idea of people's power over their money, it seemed like a really compelling thing. And it all kind of coalesced into the book we have today.
Yeah, I mean, you talk a lot about your experience, right? Your firsthand experience about debt and how it consumed your life. And the book shares some of the personal journey and with that financial struggle. So maybe you can share a little bit more about your story and your experience.
Yeah. Like I said, I'm somebody who made a bunch of mistakes when I was younger, and really struggled to wrangle that in and to do things better. And over the years, what I've wanted to kind of share what I've learned, because I've learned so much from that past time when I just was really struggling with card debt, the car payment, bad decisions, and that sort of thing. And it's been a really significant journey. And then as I've gotten older and transitioned into things like talking with my son about money and saving for college and retirement and all those sorts of things, it's just I've learned a lot, and it's a real honor to be able to share with people what I've learned and hopefully help them do a little better than I did.
Well, some people are calling your book the ultimate guide to asking for what you want in every financial situation. And it really does come down for that, asking for what you want, because after all, when it comes to your money, you really are the best advocate. So can you speak a little bit more to this?
Yeah, that's really the theme of the whole book, is that you have more power over your money than you realize. And I'm somebody who talks to people for a living and shares my views and opinions for a living. But even for somebody like me, it's a difficult thing to raise your hand in a room full of people that you maybe do or don't know, or asking for help or requesting some sort of break. But it's so important. And the reason why that's so important is that if you don't do it, other people aren't going to do it for you. And really what I try to get through in the book is the idea that people do have more power than they realize. And a lot of that power comes from the idea of lifetime value, which is that the longer you stick around as a customer for a business, generally speaking, the more money they're going to make off of you. So once you kind of understand that, when you go in and ask for a break or some help, you realize that you're coming in a little bit of a position of power, because that company ultimately wants you to stick around. So that can hopefully make you feel a little bit better, a little more confident about what you're asking for.
And I think I agree with a lot of what you just said there. And I think, you know, the must-have money manual that you have developed, it really focuses on seven key areas in life. They're credit and debt, healthcare, housing, shopping, travel, work, and of course, relationships. So I think you've got it all covered with all these areas, but maybe you can share why you chose these seven key areas.
Well, I chose those seven in part because it covers so much ground, and it kind of drives home the fact that you do have power over your money in so many different areas. It's not just about getting a late fee waived on a credit card. It can be about negotiating, you know, for the furniture dealer to throw in some throw pillows with that new couch that you're buying, or talking to your elderly mother or father about their financial situation. All those sorts of things are really significant, and they're all about you advocating for yourself, you speaking up for yourself, and you kind of understanding again the power that you have when it relates to money.
So Matt, as you mentioned, your book is described as a money manual because you include the questions, the success stories, potential risks, and of course, tools to guide the reader through the pros and cons of each one of those. You also include a fill-in-the-blank script for the reader. So why did you choose this approach in writing this book, and how do you think it really benefits the reader?
Well, I chose that approach because I wanted to make it as easy to use over and over and over again as possible. Because so many personal finance books are more about narrative and less about kind of practical steps and that you can take and tips that you can use. And I wanted this book to be very, very practical, very hands-on. Part of why we released it as a paperback instead of a hardcover was that we wanted to encourage people to mark it up and to kind of make notes and to fill in the blank, like you said, with those scripts. But also part of the reason for all of that was just to kind of anticipate people's objections or people's concerns as it relates to making these requests. And we wanted to do as much as we possibly could to alleviate those concerns and give people the confidence that they need and that they can have to ask these questions. And the best way to do that is to give people data and to prove to people that these things work, but also to let them hear from real people who have done these things, and a real diverse group of people, because we all know that different people have different experiences and different reactions to things. So I wanted to kind of cover as much ground as I could.
Yeah, and I really like that, because I think, you know, when you're talking about real life stories, it helps people see themselves in those stories, right? Like to your point, like it can really resonate with them how someone else went about things, or what were the sort of pitfalls that they encountered, or how did they overcome different things. So I do really like that approach. And I read a comment on your website that really resonated, and I hope it resonates well with our listeners too. You have more power over your money than you realize. Put more of it in your pocket and keep it there. Sometimes all you have to do is ask. So this seems really simple, right? But reality is not many of us do ask. So why do you feel this is?
Any number of reasons. One of the biggest reasons, honestly, is that people don't know that they can. It's really as simple as that for some folks. And that's one of the big goals behind this book, is to spread the word that in most cases you can ask for things. And the worst thing, like all of our parents told us, the worst thing that'll happen is that somebody tells you no. But then There certainly are people who simply don't like to negotiate. Or they don't feel that they'll be any good at it, or they don't feel that they have a chance to succeed, or they just don't have time. People have to-do lists that are 1,000 miles long, and the last thing that people want to do is spend time on the phone or whatever, haggling with people. But the point of this book is that you do have that power, and things can work, and these things can help you. And also just the idea that you negotiate more in your real life than you probably realize that you do, whether it's negotiating what temperature you're going to set the thermostat on at your house, or who's going to take the kids to soccer practice and the carpool in what day, to picking what restaurant to go to, things like that. They're all negotiations, and just they may have lower stakes than some of the other things that we're talking about in the book, but they're still negotiations. And if you are comfortable doing those sorts of things, it's really not much of a leap to go to the next stuff.
Yeah. And I think it is thinking about it from that perspective, right? Like, what are all the other things in your life that you maybe don't put as much thought into how they're coming to be, right? Or the choices that you're making without actually even in realizing. I think we're all guilty of that, right? Not really thinking about that stuff and not giving ourselves the credit for making the choices that we're making sometimes. So if you're ready to be more financially savvy, Matt's got some advice for you. We'll be right back.
You're listening to a rebroadcast of Your Money with BDO's Nancy Snedden. Listen live Saturdays at 3 p.m. and Tuesdays at 7 p.m.
Welcome back. You're listening to Your Money here on VOCM. I'm your host, Nancy Snedden, licensed insolvency trustee with BDO Canada, right here in Newfoundland and Labrador. My guest today is Matt Schultz. He's a speaker, finance educator, and author of the recently released book, Ask Questions, Save Money, Make More. It's being described as a must-read for anyone looking to save money. And who really doesn't want to do that, right? So before the break, we talked about the 7 key areas of life that you focus on in your book, Matt. And I want to break some of those down now and discuss them in more detail over the remaining segments of the show. So let's start with credit and debt, because we know that there are many out there struggling right now to make ends meet. And many are turning to credit to keep up with the rising cost of living. And of course, that means they're increasing their level of debt that they're carrying. I'm seeing this more and more in my practice, right? Like, the levels of debt that people are coming to us to get help with are larger than we've seen in the past. And that's because they have been trying to supplement their income for some time now, right? With the rise in cost of living, higher interest rates make that more unmanageable. Sure. So you encourage readers to build their confidence and ask for better rates, to negotiate lower interest on everything from mortgage payments to auto loans to credit cards. So I'm going to start with the obvious question first. Why is it that when it comes to banks and credit card companies, that most people just accept the interest rate that's offered?
They do that because they either don't realize that they can ask, that they can negotiate those sorts of things, or they don't feel confident in doing so. There's so many places in life where people know that they have questions and they want to get answers to them, but they don't feel like they have the proper knowledge to really engage in a conversation. I mean, a lot of people feel like that when they take their car to the mechanic or when they're talking to their doctor, or when they're talking to the credit card company. So that is certainly something that that people wrestle with. But part of the big significant part of the book is telling people that they do have that power. And one of my favorite stats in the book that always gets a reaction when I talk to people about it in interviews and just kind of in life is that LendingTree did a survey a while back that showed that 76% of people who asked for a lower interest rate on their credit card in the past year got one, and the average reduction was about 6 percentage points. And that's really significant stuff. And the fact that the success rate is that high shows that it's not just people with super high credit scores and long track records and perfect histories that are getting their way. It's regular folks who are struggling, and a lot of times they just need to pick up the phone and call.
Yeah, and I've given that advice to some clients when, you know, they maybe don't need to do a consumer proposal or a bankruptcy, but there's some things that they could do maybe within their budget or some negotiation with like a particular creditor that's causing them some angst. And they're often surprised, right, that, yeah, you know, they could ask for a different rate. And sometimes they're surprised when they're successful, of course, right, in getting that reduced interest rate. So to your point, you know, that you've been making since the top of the show, you just need to ask, right? And you don't know what you can get or what you can be successful in if you don't ask the question.
Yeah, but it's not just like we saw a lot of people ask this during kind of the darkest days of the pandemic when people lost jobs and people really needed help and all that sort of thing. But the data over the years around that number and around asking for help and asking for breaks has been pretty consistent. It's not just a pandemic thing. It's not just a high inflation thing. It's not a good times, bad times thing. It's just a thing that businesses do. And it's something that is absolutely worth people's time to ask for.
Yeah, I mean, the worst that can happen is they say no, right? So why not ask, because you don't know what you might be able to get. But I think in some cases, people may feel intimidated by the person across from them approving the loan or the mortgage or the credit application. Sure. So what do you think this is? And I guess what advice would you have for someone going into that?
Well, it's understandable because, again, people assume that they have less knowledge or less negotiating wherewithal than the person on the other end of the phone. So a lot of times they don't even bother to pick up. But the truth is that it's just a person on the other end of the line. And generally speaking, they want to help. I mean, obviously, there are certainly bad actors. There are people who have just had a bad day and that sort of thing. So I'm not going to be too Pollyanna about all of this. But generally speaking, people want to help more than they want to not help. And one thing that people can do is that they can practice, they can role play how these conversations are going to go, because the best athletes, the best musicians, the best orators, they all practice over and over and over and over and over again, even though they're the best in the world at what they do. So if you are somebody who is nervous about having a conversation with the bank or with your boss or whoever, working with a trusted person, trusted friend, trusted relative to kind of role play a little bit of what that conversation might look like can be really helpful. And, you know, you do it a few times where you have the first time everything goes perfectly, the second time there's a little bit of pushback, and the third time you get like really tough with them and make it a challenging conversation. And then the idea is that once you've had those experiences, it'll make it a little easier for you to manage and to emotionally not get too overwhelmed when you have that conversation for real.
Yeah, so it's about experience, right? And practice and building your own confidence in the situation.
Yeah. It's about, going back to kind of sports terms, it's about getting your reps in and learning that when you do these things, you're nervous, maybe your palms get sweaty, you're breathing a little more heavily, but once it's done, you've survived and you'll be okay. And sometimes it's just about kind of powering through that. To understand that these things can work and that you'll be all right on the other end.
Oh, absolutely. And I think you, one of the interesting things I saw you note that studies show about 3/4, that's 76% of people who ask for a lower interest rate on credit cards actually get one. And that many of the rates drop by 10 percentage points or more. So I think it goes to show, right, if you have the confidence, you prepare, you go in with the right mindset in what you're going to be looking for, you can have that positive outcome. So what's the key, I guess, in negotiating better terms or better interest rates that are going to save people money, like beyond, I guess, what we've talked about so far with like the practice and the mindset, that kind of thing?
Sure. Yeah. You need to do a little bit of legwork first. First, you need to have at least a vague idea of what your credit score is. Because if you have a crummy credit score and you go in asking for the best interest rate on a credit card, for example, you're just not going to get it. So you can kind of lay some boundaries a little bit and kind of frame your conversation a little bit that way once you know what your credit score is. And then from there, you can go about looking for some loan offers at LendingTree or at your favorite bank or credit union or online lender and find some loans or some cards that you would be likely to qualify for. And that can also be things that you might get in your snail mail as well. So you can take that information and go back to your credit card company and say, you know, I've been a good customer of y'all's for years, but my interest rate is 27%, and I've just seen an offer that I've received for a card with 21%. Would you be able to match it? And, you know, oftentimes, I mean, they're always generally going to listen to you, but oftentimes they'll be willing to work with you and give you a little bit of a break.
Yeah, and I think people have seen that successfully in other areas, right? So if I think about, you know, home insurance or, you know, cable and internet, and people may shop around and say, you know, I have this different rate, but they don't necessarily take the same outlook, I guess, when they're negotiating rates, right, that they would in those kinds of things. But they're very similar, right? And you would take a very similar approach. So it's just like taking that skill set or that same approach and applying it in different areas. Well, Matt, making money is something we all would like to do. But when it comes to asking for that raise or promotion, it can be tough. So Matt's going to share advice on how you should be looking at that when we come back. Please stay with us.
Saturday morning, join us for the Irish Newfoundland Show. Send your request to IrishNL@VOCM.com or submit them online at VOCM.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Your Money here on VOCM. I'm Nancy Snedden, licensed insolvency trustee with BDO right here in Newfoundland and Labrador. My guest today is Matt Schultz. He's a speaker, finance educator, and author of the recently released book, Ask Questions, Save Money, Make More. So the book is described as a guide to help you really build your self-confidence and courage in your financial life. And I think a big part of our financial life, of course, is tied to our income and primarily the salary you receive from your job. So that's what I'd like to focus on now, Matt, advice regarding salary negotiations, because it is something that you do cover in the book. Sure. So I guess a good place for us to start is maybe at the hiring phase. So for listeners who may be negotiating salary as part of a hire for a new job, what's your advice?
Yeah, it's interesting when you're talking about, you know, the big question of, you know, salary expectations at a new job, for example. There, some of the oldest advice, or kind of the rule of thumb, had been, you know, he who gives the first number loses. And that's been a saying in negotiations forever. And going into this book, I spoke with a bunch of different experts who know far more about negotiating salaries and, you know, spend all their time in this space. And what they basically told me was that is an outdated idea, and that when you're talking about salary expectations, it's all about telling yourself that you are worthy and recognizing that companies have budgets to pay you. So instead of kind of saying, no, I don't want to give a number, or kind of hedging on stuff like that, you instead kind of handle it a little more directly, where you say something like, you know, thank you for asking the question. You know, I'm really excited. It's a great company. I've liked the people I've met, and I think I can be a real asset. And with that in mind, you know, given my experience and expertise, I'm looking for a salary range of blank. And then after that, you stop talking, which can be the hardest thing for a lot of folks. But that was one of the most interesting aspects in the creation of the book to me, is the focus on instilling that confidence in people and having people not be shy about saying what they want, as long as they've done their homework and know that what they're asking for is a reasonable thing.
Yeah, I love that you point out that, you know, just stop talking piece in the silence. It's interesting, right? Like, you know, 30 seconds doesn't sound like a long time, but when you're sitting in silence, 30 seconds can feel like an eternity, right?
Yeah, 100%. And we've all been on, you know, car rides and stuff where things are silent and you're like, should I say something? And there's somebody in the room who can't deal with the awkward silence. But when you're in salary negotiations and stuff like that, to a degree, you kind of have to force yourself to power through. I mean, you don't sit there for 20 minutes without somebody talking, but you also don't just, you know, you give it more than like 5 or 10 seconds too.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I do this in meetings myself, right? You just let the silence sit, because, you know, if you're too quick to jump in, you're not necessarily going to hear from the other side, right? And you want to give them the time to process and come back with what their thoughts are. It's so, so important. And I think it's an important discussion right now, because we're in a period of economic uncertainty. And, you know, we've talked about high inflation and high interest rates, you know, on many, many shows over the last, you know, 18 to 24 months. And so there's lots of Canadians out there that are hoping for a bump in their salary or a raise, sure, because they need the income to offset some of these increased costs. So, you know, how do they prepare for the meeting? What's your advice in how they should prepare and to go talk to their manager or their boss? And maybe what tips can you share on negotiating a better salary or championing yourself?
Yeah, again, so much of it is about preparing and being ready when the opportunity arises. And one of the simplest pieces of advice that I got as I was putting this book together was just the idea of taking a few minutes once a week, a couple times a month, to make notes of the things that you've accomplished, and just kind of keeping a running list at your work. And these could include everything from, like, you know, the keeping the lights on tasks, to stepping in to help somebody when they needed it, to really going above and beyond. And And that's a really good thing to do while it is front of mind, because the thing that people run into when they're starting to negotiate is that they've done a bunch of stuff and they've forgotten about it. And that, you know, that basically means that you have fewer data points and fewer bullets to use to make your case to your boss that you deserve a little bit of extra money. So if you take a couple of minutes every once in a while to jot some stuff down, when the time comes to do that negotiation, instead of trying to come up with things that you've done, you'll actually end up having to whittle down some of the things that you've done to like focus on just the best things.
Yeah, and it's interesting you say that. I actually talk to my team about this all the time. Like when it comes time for performance review, and you know, there's a self-assessment, and then you know, obviously the assessment from your leader. And I think it's important that you can be specific on the things that you are actually doing, right? How you're yeah. adding value, the impact that you're having. The more specific that you can be, obviously, the more impactful that discussion is going to be as well. So I agree with you 100% on that. Yeah, I think go ahead.
Yeah, no, and like you said, the more specific you can be, the better, where instead of saying, you know, we did this deal with client A, that you can say instead, you know, helped broker a, you know, $500,000 agreement with blah, blah, blah. The more numbers you can put in, the more specifics you can put in, the more you can quantify these things exactly, the more powerful your argument is.
No, absolutely. I think sometimes too, people focus on salary, and especially right now because of the cost of living, right? And that's, you know, what's hitting their bank account to help them pay their bills. But I think it's also important to look at what the benefits that you may have, right, in sure. in your position and the value that they have and how they can help you financially. So maybe you can speak to some of this and share your thoughts on the asks around benefits.
Yeah, no, it's a very, very important thing. I mean, things like paid time off, 401k matches, bonuses, tuition reimbursement, stock options, those are all important things. Health insurance, heaven knows, is a super important one, and one that has certainly become more and more of a discussion point in the last few years is, you know, where you work. I mean, there's so many companies have returned to office 3 to 5 days a week now, and that is, while that is not only a financial question, that is a very, very significant financial question, because it involves childcare and commuting and all that sort of stuff. So all of these things are really, really important, and before you go in to have that conversation, it is worth going in and kind of just ranking, whether in your head or writing it down or whatever, which of those are the most important to you and what are some must-haves and some nice-to-haves, because there may be a case where if a company doesn't quite match your salary expectations, but they will let you work at home entirely remotely, or they will they have a 401k match and another place doesn't, all that stuff should get factored in. That's important.
No, absolutely. And just for listeners out there, 401k match, that's a bit of a U.S. term. So in Canada, Matt, I'd say most people would see like an RRSP matching program is what they'd see in their employer. So it would be the same type of thing. So I think one of the things that comes up time and time again, I think since the beginning of time and continues to be many years later, is a bit of a gender gap when it comes to men and women. And that is not different in the negotiation style either. So we're going to talk a little bit about that when we come back. Please stay with us.
Every Saturday is perfect for a night at the cabin. The Cabin Party with Brian O'Connell. Saturday night starting at 7 p.m. on VOCM.
Welcome back to Your Money here on VOCM. I'm your host, Nancy Snedden, licensed insolvency trustee with BDO Canada right here in Newfoundland and Labrador. I'm joined today by Matt Schultz. He's a speaker, finance educator, and author of the recently released book, Ask Questions, Save Money, and Make More. And so we're talking about that today, and we were talking in the last segment, the importance of salary negotiations and looking at the benefits that you're getting an employer and the impact that they can have. But one of the things that I've seen a lot, right, in many different stories and surveys that are out there is the talk about gender gap, right, when it comes to salaries and benefits and all those types of things here in Canada. And surveys actually show that men seem to do better when it comes to the bargaining process. So, Matt, can you share your thoughts on why this might be and maybe some advice out there for our female listeners on how they could be approaching this differently?
Yeah, no, the gender gap is definitely a thing. Is concerning as that might be in 2024, that it's still a thing. There's no question that it is, and some of that can be attributed to some old-fashioned gender roles and the way folks are brought up to, they may be told that it's not ladylike to ask for too much or things like just really super outdated stuff like that. But then there's also the aspect that we've seen in lots of data that women tend to be a little more conservative and a little more cautious with their money, generally speaking, and a little more risk averse in a lot of ways. And I think that could be showing itself in a less willingness to negotiate. And some of that, again, comes down to less financial margin for error for women, because women would be more likely to run single family households, make less money, paying more for lots of things, bearing more of the child raising responsibility. All of those things make women understandably a little less, like a little more risk averse, and that works to their detriment to at least some degree, especially when it comes to negotiating.
Yeah, and you know, I'm a big proponent of empowering women. I am a woman, right? And I've sort of risen through the ranks at my firm, and I had really great mentors that helped me with that. And I think that is so important, right? That you have that sort of trusted source where you can, run things by and, talk to them about what's worked for them, whether it's a male or a female. But oftentimes what I see in these discussions when I'm having them with women that I'm mentoring, it is about that confidence, right? And I often tell a story to them that says, there was a senior leader, it was a male, and he told me a story where if he was hiring for a senior role and he had five criteria, there'd be women in the room that would say, oh, I only have four of the five skill sets, I best not apply. There'd be many men in the room that would say, I have two of the five, I'm a shoo-in.
Yeah.
Right? So it's about building that confidence and seeing that, you are deserving of the salary, the benefits, whatever it is that you're negotiating, what you're looking for. So Matt, I want to turn a little bit now to, I guess, the process that you went through when you were writing that book. And you talk a lot about the interviews, right? Yeah. That you did for this book. And there are similarities, I think, between successful requests and those who make them. So maybe we can talk a little bit about that now and how each benefit listeners out there who are ready to ask the questions, right, to save more and to make more. So I'll just go down through a couple of them and you can share your thoughts on it. So one of the ones that you have is there's power in sharing your story.
Yeah, that's an important one. And it's people people don't necessarily like to thrust their problems on other people because they think, well, you know, other people have it worse than I do, or they may be embarrassed that they're struggling with something. But especially if you are reaching out to a lender, for example, for help, being willing to share that story, to be vulnerable, to tell them that you've lost your job or you're dealing with a medical emergency or something like that is an important thing to do, because it basically humanizes you and it gives them the full context of your story, and it makes them a little more likely to connect with you and makes them a little more likely to help you, because most people generally want to help people, but they can't really do it if they don't know what people are going through.
Now, that's a really, really great point. So let's get into some of the rest of these. So one, that I think I need a little bit more explanation myself on is 3 is a magic number.
Yeah, it's all about getting bids and getting information about helping you in the negotiating process. And we think about it when we're talking about contractors or, you know, mechanics or things like that, where you, if you need your fence repaired, you may reach out to 3 different contractors and see what the best bid is. And that can kind of give you sort of the lay of the land there. But that's true in so many other cases, whether you're shopping for, you're like negotiating with a university in terms of their tuition. It's having more than one school to play the other off of can be significant, and things like that. So it really is primarily about kind of making sure that you're getting the lay of the land. And if you only get 2 bids, for example, they could be on the extremes of what the reality is, then you get that 3rd bid and it kind of helps you see which is closer to what you should do.
That's great. Well, Matt, listen, there's so many more of these that we could go through, and I encourage people to pick up your book to learn more about this, but we do need to move to final thoughts now. So if I could ask you for a final piece of advice that you could leave with our listeners today, what would it be?
The biggest piece of advice that I would give, or what I want people to take away from this book, is again the idea that you have more power over your money than you realize, and that these things do matter. And whether you're talking about lowering a medical bill or waiving a credit card late fee or splitting the bill at a group dinner without getting stuck paying 2/3 of it, these things really matter. And if you don't advocate for yourself, chances are nobody will, and you can end up paying far more than you need to for a lot of things. And with as expensive as life is in 2024, that's the last thing any of us needs. So that's such an important thing, understanding your power and understanding that when you are asking people for help or breaks or discounts, that they have the incentive to give those things to you because they make more money off of you if you stick around.
And I think important too, Matt, is that, you know, you may not be successful all the time, but that doesn't mean you should stop trying, right? So if the first time you make the ask, you do get a no, or you don't get what you're looking for, that doesn't mean you stop the ask, right? And that you don't look for other opportunities or other things where you should be asking the question, right?
Right. Even sometimes you, the person on the other end of the phone has just had a bad day, and you could literally pick up the phone 5 minutes later, talk to somebody else in that customer service center who just came on and they're feeling good about things and are more willing to help. So it really can be as simple as that. And the other thing that I would add is just the importance of being nice. Again, people want to help people generally. And if you are if you're a jerk to the person on the other end of that phone who's probably been yelled at 10 or 12 times that day, they're not going to want to do much to help you. But if you're nice, if you're polite, chances are your odds of success are a little better than you realize.
Yeah, it's staying the course, right? And understanding that you may not be successful all the time, but it doesn't mean that it's not worth looking into, whether it's like we talked about your interest rates, your salary negotiations, like even the things that do come up every day, right? So looking for a better deal on some of your household expenses, really analyzing the subscriptions that you have and that kind of thing, and how could you be doing better, and what are the things that could impact your budget positively? Well, Matt, for people out there who wanted to reach out to get more advice, maybe follow you on social media or pick up a copy of your book, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, I am on social media at By Matt Schultz. It's BY, and the last name is SCHULZ. And you can also find out more about me and my book and sign up for my mailing list at mattschultz.com.
That's great. Thanks again for joining us. And of course, I always want to hear from you, our listeners. If you have a comment or question or maybe a topic you'd like me to discuss here on Your Money, you can email me at yourmoney@bdo.ca or give me a call at 800-563-8337. Until next week, I'm Nancy Snedden. Stay safe and be well, everyone.
If you have a question or comment, send an email to yourmoney@bdo.ca. This has been Your Money with Nancy Snedden of BDO, Licensed Insolvency Trustee. On your VOCM.